The views expressed on ExoPolitics Radio with Alfred Weber are the views of Alfred Weber and not specifically those of our on-air affiliates or our sponsors.
31 seconds.
Welcome back. This is ExoPolitics Radio, a weekly magazine format public affairs program on exopolitics, the new political science of outer space, the science of relations between our human civilization and other intelligent civilizations in the universe. Our audio archives are free and open as a service to the public 24/7 at our new home, www.exopolitics.org. That's www.exopolitics.org. Exopolitics Radio is a listener-sponsored radio station, and we welcome your voluntary listener contributions that pay for our overhead at exopoliticsradio.org. Exopolitics Radio is broadcast weekly in our affiliates, which include Revere Radio Network and Kansas City Online Radio Network. Listen to Exopolitics Radio on iTunes and RSS feeds throughout cyberspace. As of May 11th, 2009, Exopolitics Radio is listened to in over 70 countries around the world. For our free online archives from March 2007 to March 2009, please visit www.exopoliticsradio.org. I'm your host, Alfred Lambermont Weber. And welcome back, listeners. We hope that many of you listeners who have listened to us on exopoliticsradio.com, where you can still catch our audio archives through March 2009, get the news that we are now on www.exopoliticsradio.org. It's still the same program. We still have the same editorial policy. And please let your friends and networks know that we have moved. Today, in Season 6, Program 2, we have the first of a two-part feature interview with researcher and author Barbara Hand Clow, who's talking to us about 2009, the beginning of extraterrestrial contact. And it's in that context that we bring you this week's official Exopolitics Radio commentary. That is, the discovery of life on Mars by Andrew D. Bashago has actually been chosen as the number one UFO story of 2008. So, The Discovery of Life on Mars by Andrew D. Bashago has been chosen as the number one UFO story of 2008. We have predicted that, and in fact, you can listen to that in Barbara Hand Clow's interviews talking about the sixth day of the galactic underworld of the Mayan calendar, whose kind of paradigm is exopolitics, or the end of the planetary quarantine. ExoPoliticsRadio.org was notified of the award by veteran broadcaster Jerry Pippin in a May 10, 2009 email statement. We made your ExoPoliticsRadio.org with Alfred Lambermont Weber broadcast story on the discovery of life on Mars, the top UFO event of 2008. In a 41-page paper dated December 12, 2008, Washington State trial lawyer and environmental scholar Andrew D. Bashago sets out numerous analyses and photographs identifying three species of humanoid beings, numerous species of animals, structures, and statues on the surface of Mars. These photographs are images isolated by Andrew D. Bashago from within NASA rover Spirit photograph PIA-10214, a composite photograph taken in November 2007 in the Columbia Basin on Mars and released publicly by NASA on its website in January 2008. Mr. Bisciago's landmark paper, The Discovery of Life on Mars, can be downloaded free in PDF format at www.exopolitics.com. Now, we would contend here at Exopolitics Radio, and in fact, that Mr. Bisciago's paper dated December 12, 2008, constitutes a fulfillment of the end of the planetary quarantine, which was predicted, as you will learn in this two-part series, by the Kalman Clow time acceleration matrix. And what we have, because the sixth day of the galactic underworld, which is that quadrant of the Mayan calendar, which relates to exopolitics and the end of the planetary quarantine, which started in November 2007 and ended on November 13th, 2008, we're now in a period known as the galactic underworld, which starts on November 13, 2008, and it goes to November 20, 2009. And it was in during this period, the sixth underworld, that the discovery of life on Mars took place and was published. Now, just to give you an idea of what the top five UFO stories of 2008 are, the first is life on Mars, and that is that NASA rover Spirit seems to show photographs of humanoid forms, animals, statues, totem poles, and other abundance of life. Secondly, the Needles UFO crash. Was this something from Black Ops? I'm reading from the ranking by Jerry Pippin. Third, the death of Mr. X UFO whistleblower. Mr. X did a series of shows and top secret papers involving military knowledge of UFOs, and he died mysteriously in December of 2008. Fourth, Gary McKinnon. The UFO hacker battles extradition to the U.S. for cyber terrorism. He had just received a judicial review slated for mid-March in his fight to stay in the U.K. And finally, the Stephenville, Texas UFO sightings of January 8th, 2008. And these were UFOs near the Bush Vacation White House, hundreds seeing them. And in fact, there's a radar report released by the FAA, over 2 million radar returns, showing that the Stephenville, Texas UFO, whatever it was, whether it was a high-flying blimp, a kind of an upper ultra-dimensional light craft, or what we call the treaty extraterrestrials, in other words, the Greys or the reptilians with whom the U.S. has entered into secret treaties. On learning of the award, Mr. Bisciago praised the work of other Mars anomaly researchers, including Schiaparelli, Lowell, Tesla, DiPietro, Molinar, Carlotto, Hoagland, Drazen, McDaniel, Pillinger, Hancock, Van Flaveren, Skipper, Brown, and Weber. Now, myself, Alfred Weber, are in there because in my book, Exopolitics, the last quarter of it is a case study on an apparent civilization living underneath the surface of Mars and what what the exopolitics toward that civilization might be. Yes, Mars is inhabited! Exclamation point, Andrew D. Bisciago. I'm reading, incidentally, from my article at examiner.com, Seattle Exopolitics Examiner. Simply go to exopolitics.com and you'll be able to click into the article. Reached at his law office in Southwest Washington State, Mr. Bisciago stated, I'm delighted and honored that Jerry Pippin has selected my discovery of life on Mars as the top UFO story of 2008. When I was writing my paper, The Discovery of Life on Mars, in 2008, I knew that I was standing on the shoulders of giants. For more than a century, many dedicated, diligent investigators have endeavored to enlighten human beings on Earth about the fact that life exists on Mars. I would include in this tradition such individuals as Schiaparelli, Lowell, Tesla, DiPietro, Molinar, Carlotto, Hoagland, Drazing, McDaniel, Pillinger, Hancock, Van Flander, and Skipper, Brown, and Weber. These Mars researchers have posed to humanity a question of vital significance, namely, does the planet every 2 years come closest, that every 2 years come closest to Earth harbor life? And with it, the implication, the question, do we live in an inhabited universe? This is Mr. Bud Bishago speaking again. I was the individual given the cosmic privilege to discover in NASA's own photograph this positive evidence of life on Mars, and affirm the question long posed by these earlier researchers and declare at last, yes, Mars is inhabited. The discovery of life on Mars is the first work in natural history to analyze evidence of life forms and ancient artifacts on Mars in such a way as to demonstrably prove that Mars is inhabited. Now that humanity has this information available to us, we must move beyond the debate over whether Mars is inhabited and begin the debate about what we should do about the discovery that Mars is inhabited. The United States and Russia are presently planning manned missions to Mars, and even as distinguished a space scientist as astronaut Buzz Aldrin has called for the placement of human settlements on Mars. Since Mars does not belong to us, Mars belongs to the Martians, such proposals are fraught with scientific, diplomatic, and environmental implications that we have not even begun to ponder, much less publicly debate. We must now decide whether such visits to Mars should even take place, and if they do take place, how they might take place without causing irreparable harm to the environment of Mars or untoward disruption of its indigenous civilization. Exopolitics Radio and the Discovery of Life on Mars. The number one UFO story of 2008, The Discovery of Life on Mars by Andrew D. Bishago, was broadcast in a series of original programs by exopoliticsradio.org with Alfred Lambert Weber, a weekly magazine format exopolitical public affairs talk show exploring the evidence for an impact on our human society of intelligent, organized life in the universe. As of May 11, 2009, exopoliticsradio.org was listened to in over 70 countries, including the USA and Canada. Its programs are accessed free at any time at www.exopoliticsradio.org as a public service. Programs on the award-winning Discovery of Life on Mars by Andrew D. Bishago include the following, and I'm just going to summarize them here because we will be replaying them in the weeks to come as part of our interviews on exopoliticsradio.org. Number one, the beings on the edge and the humanoid beings in the rock garden and on Tsiolkovsky Ridge. NASA PIA 10214, the photograph, is a composite photograph that was taken in November of 2007, released publicly in 2008, and is of the Columbia Basin on Mars. And that's about the latitude of comparably on Earth of Dayton, Ohio, on Mars. So that's the first award-winning Exopolitics radio program. Second, The Discovery of Life on Mars by Andrew D. Bishago and Alfred Weber. Part two is The Typology of Martian Humanoids. And by going into NASA photograph 10214, we can begin to see the various typologies of humanoids from Mars, of which there are at least three. part three of this program, of the award-winning program, are the typologies of Martian animals. And you will learn of the various categories of Martian animals that now have been dispositively identified in these photographs. Finally, on page four, Martian structures, NASA's cover-up of life on Mars. In other words, this is a review of the various structures on Mars at the Columbia Basin and of NASA's cover-up of life on Mars. Just a bit about Mr. Bashago. He's an American trial lawyer who grew up in New Jersey and California and was one of the Wig Wiz kids who served from 1969 to 1972 in DARPA's Time Space Exploration Program, Project Pegasus, otherwise known as a secret DARPA Time Travel Teleportation Program. And we'll be learning more about that in future episodes of Exopolitics Radio. So there is a Andrew Bashago is the editor of Alfred Lamont Weber's book, Exopolitics, Politics, Government, and Law in the Universe, and which you can obtain here on exopoliticsradio.org, and the Fatima Trilogy, a definitive history of the Fatima incident of 1917 that explores its extraterrestrial aspects. Andy founded the Mars Anomaly Research Society, MARS, in 2008 after discovering abundant evidence in a photograph of the red planet being back to Earth by NASA's Mars exploration rover Spirit. His discovery of life on Mars might be an apocalyptic event in human history. His crusade to evaluate and prove his findings and bring them to public light has been called, quote, heroic. About his discovery, Andy stated, NASA JPL photograph PIA 10214 is going to spark a second Copernican revolution on our planet, and it was my cosmic privilege to discover that it contained evidence of life on Mars. Society will be transformed, I think, for the better by the revelation of the fact that we are not alone in the universe, that we are not even alone in our own solar system. Now, I might say that Andy Bashago, the editor of Exopolitics, will be co-presenting with me at the 2009 Conspiracy Con, which is June 6th to 7th in Santa Clara, California, at the Santa Clara Marriott there. And in the PowerPoint, we will share not only the photographs, but we will share, Mr. Bashago is going to share some of the deep background of this photograph and of life on Mars that he's been privileged to have during his stint, not only as a Pentagon whiz kid in Project Pegasus, 1969 to 1972, but also throughout the years preparing him for this, the revelation of life on Mars. And we'd just like to say a bit about Mars. The Mars Anomaly Research Society, MARS, is a Washington State nonprofit organization that is spearheading the international effort to research, disclose, and educate to the public about the discovery of life on Mars. Andrew D. Bashago is founder and president, and Alfred Lamont Weber is chairman of MARS. You can download over 30 free PDF documents on the discovery of life on Mars at www.exopolitics.com. A Mars website will soon be launched at projectmars.net. For more information about Mars and the ongoing discovery of life on Mars, you can contact either president.mars@gmail.com or chairman.mars@gmail.com. I happen to serve as the chairman of this organization. Now, so here at Exopolitics Radio, what we're trying to do is to place you in the best context possible for understanding the cosmic forces emanating with the end of the planetary quarantine And this is something which is emanating from the galactic center black hole, a black hole about 4.1 million times the size and density of the sun that lies at the center of our galaxy and that rotates once every 11 minutes. And from that, from the electromagnetic emanations from that, come the thought forms going to the crystalline core of our sun and of our Earth, and finally into our morphogenic field, providing us the human community, with the expansion of consciousness to be able to listen to new discoveries, such as the discovery of life on Mars. And as you will learn in our interview forthcoming up just now with Barbara Han Clow, who helped develop the Clow-Kalman time acceleration matrix, it is exactly within the part of that matrix at the beginning of the galactic underworld, which began on November 13th, 2009, and goes to November 2008, and goes to November 2009. Mr. Bashago's discovery was made on December 12th, 2008, and published then, and that is right at the beginning, at the cusp of the galactic underworld, where you'll learn that Barbara Han Clow says it is most plausible to have these sorts of discoveries about contact with extraterrestrials come up. So that is of a single whole cloth. And we urge you to go to exopolitics.com, our parent website, to download for free on PDF the 41-page paper by Mr. Bashago, and if you like to attend our presentations, our PowerPoint presentations, so far on June 6th and 7th at the Conspiracy Con at the Santa Clara, California Marriott, and then on July 4th and 5th at the ESETI 2009 at the ESETI conference, ECTI.org, conference in Trout Lake, Washington. There you have it. Our posture on Exopolitics Radio, of course, we're chairman of the Mars Anomaly Research Society, so we do have a built-in bias, is that this Mars discovery is for real. It's a real thing. It's been accessed, and I'll let Mr. Bashago explain that access publicly, along with his experiences publicly. And so this broadcast is really for the public that has not yet learned, the public that's on the fence, those exopolitics and UFO activists who are critics of the Mars findings, that eventually time will prove these correct, that they are the definitive findings that established life on Mars. This is Exopolitics Radio. I'm your host, Alfred Weber. Please stay tuned for our exclusive interview with author and researcher Barbara Han Clow on 2009 and the end of the planetary quarantine. Thank you. Today we have our very special guest, Barbara Han Clow, who is an international Mayan elder, Comunidad Indígena Maya, a Cherokee record keeper, and internationally acclaimed ceremonial teacher and author. She has written the recent book, The Mayan Code, Time Acceleration and Awakening the World Mind, as well as other 10 other books, including The Pleiadian Agenda, The Mind Chronicles, Chiron, Alchemy of the Nine Dimensions, and Catastrophobia. And she maintains an astrological website, at www.handclow2012.com. I might add that Barbara also lives in Vancouver, British Columbia, as does your humble host. And I've had the honor and occasion to meet her. And so it's been the coming together of two streams, that of exopolitics and that of a larger enterprise centered on the massive black hole at the center of our galaxy. Welcome, Barbara.
Hello, Alfred. Thank you. I'm here.
Well, you know, for our audience, which is worldwide, actually, people in over 70 countries are listening to us now and have been following our journey through exopolitics and meeting with you and with your thought as you set it out in your book, The Mayan Code. It's like juncturing up with another great river when two great rivers or streams of thought or reality meet.
Yeah, I agree with you. And I first found exopolitics when I was attempting to figure out what would be happening regarding the Mayan calendar after my book was published. In other words, I had an issue of, I covered material up to the point of publication, of course, but then I had to speculate on what would happen through 2011, 2012. And your exopolitics hypothesis was really the only thing that gave me any guidance in attempting to figure out what might be going on.
Amazing. So tell us, I've been searching for a formal term for the field that you write and study in, and I didn't know if I should call it galactic studies, or I know that we'll be covering a lot of the technicalities of the Mayan calendar, but before getting into that, we know that science has told us since the year 2000 that there's a giant black hole at the center of our galaxy. Perhaps 4,000 times as dense or as massive as our own sun, and that only recently science has confirmed that perhaps black holes are at the center of most galaxies. What is the connection between the Mayan calendar and the black hole at the center of the galaxy and behind all of these phenomena of the Mayan calendar? I mean, the acceleration of time. How exactly does that work?
Well, as most people are aware at this point, the Mayan calendar ends in 2011, 2012. I'm using two dates because there are two theories that are both very strong for each date, and I have adopted both of them. And so regarding the center of our galaxy, the Milky Way galaxy, of course, we now know scientifically that there is a black hole. And then because we've discovered that information, and also since 1999-2000, which happens to be the galactic underworld according to the Mayan calendar, during that period of time we also have come to a pretty good understanding of where we are in the galaxy. Most people understand now, you know, that they're rotating around the galactic center. And so people really have adopted, a relatively speaking, kind of a galactic form of consciousness. And then regarding Earth's orientation in the solar system to the center of the galaxy itself, we are in a period of activation by the galactic center because of certain orientations from Earth that are especially activated during the winter solstice, which of course just happened a few weeks ago. And so according to, this is not astrology, this is astronomy, we are in the middle of a very, very strong activation with the galactic center. It actually, the high point of it actually occurred in May of 1998, according to astronomy. But it's a very long alignment, close alignment of about 50, 60 years. So we're right smack dab in the middle of it. And the Mayans seem to have, the ancient Mayans, classic Mayans, 1,100, 1,200 years ago, they seem to have understood that alignment, and they seem to have understood that it would be happening in our current time. And that's why the Mayan calendar, which is actually a calendar that is 16.4 billion years long, it actually goes back to the Big Bang. The Mayans understood that, this alignment would be occurring now, and you can see that in their calendar.
Now, one of the very interesting theories that I picked up, because this both your book, The Mayan Code, and the companion book by Dr. Carl Johan Kalman, The Mayan Calendar and the Transformation of Consciousness, I think are expanding. They're seminal books in our understanding of the galaxy and our understanding of the universe, and in fact, in exopolitical studies. And please correct me if I'm wrong, but as I understand it, if we look at the center of our, at the core of our Earth, there's a crystalline core. And that crystalline core is absorbing and reflecting emanations from the black hole. And those emanations are in turn becoming fields of thought, sort of thought or electromagnetic fields around us in which we live. And our little antenna brains are picking those up. And that's what we mean by the elevation of consciousness. And that's how the various ages are modulated. Is that
yeah, and I would say it's also the way that the various stages of evolution are modulated. And Carl Kalman's great discovery is that, number one, that various stages of evolution function according to the laws of time acceleration, which we'll get into, and it's kind of hard to explain, but we've now discovered it. And then secondly, that the Mayan calendar actually is a calendar of evolutionary time accelerations, which means that the Mayans discovered about 1,200 or 1,300 years ago, or probably quite further back, probably more like 2,500 years ago. But we can prove that they had this information in 700, 800 AD. And they actually discovered the timing of these time accelerations and the dynamics of the way these time accelerations affect each other. And this is just incredible because, you know, in terms of science, scientists only really pulled together the evolutionary data bank and the various stages of evolution and extinction. They really only pulled that together in the 1950s and 1960s. And so the Mayans figured this out more than a couple of thousand years ago, number one. And then one of the really interesting things about the way Earth functions is that, as far as I can tell, we decoded the time accelerations and the dating of the basic Mayan calendar just about exactly the same time that scientists pulled together the evolutionary data bank, which is really interesting in itself.
Right. Now, what you and Dr. Kalman have done is to create a matrix which charts the Mayan calendar going back, I guess, to, what is it, 3111 B.C., is it?
Actually, Kalman's decoding of the matrix goes back to 16.4 billion years ago.
I see.
Yeah, the what you're referring to, the 5,125-year cycle, is also called the long count.
Long count. So I'm looking at a different chart, you're right, which is the durations of the nine underworlds.
That's right. So when we're working with Kalman, we're emphasizing more 16.4 billion years of evolution, where when we discuss the long count, which is, of course, a very primary discussion, the long count is actually the development of history and civilization. So the long count, the 5,125-year cycle since 3,116 B.C., that particular cycle is just one of nine underworlds, and there's eight other ones that also have all sorts of cycles and levels of development in them.
Right. And all of this is regulated and modulated by the giant black hole at the center of our galaxy.
And Kalman wouldn't, Kalman Would Moore say that, of course, the black hole is a tremendous factor in our galaxy and also affecting our solar system, but it's one of many astronomical cycles that affect the universe itself and then our planet. But the Mayan calendar is actually a you could call it God consciousness in a way, Alfred. I don't like to get into that issue of God, but the Mayan calendar actually represents the whole issue of whether there is a universal form of intelligence which is actually guiding the unfoldment of the universe, including the unfoldment of Earth. So it's more like the Mayan calendar is more like a, it's hard to come up with a word for it, it's like a device, like a mechanism, it's like a system that is actually, you know, like influencing and delineating the actual phases of creation itself.
Right. So looking here, and we have, if we look at the various underworlds, we start with a cellular underworld, which is 16.4 billion, and go to the mammalian, 820 million. I guess these are different phases.
Yeah, each one of them is an underworld.
Yeah.
And then each one of them, if we go back to 16.4 billion years ago, which corresponds fairly closely to the Big Bang, each one of these underworlds is a division by 20 of the previous one. What that means just is that if you take 820 million years, which is called the mammalian, that
right.
division, that's 1/20th of 16.4 billion years. So each
right.
one of these is a division by 20, and when we reach the point where a new underworld starts, once this division point has come, then time accelerates 20 times faster.
Right.
You know, and so the idea would be that between the cellular underworld, the 16.4 billion years of evolution, then in that process, 820 million years ago, we had a time acceleration which triggered the, in this case, the evolution of life forms. And this is why Kalaman calls it the mammalian underworld.
Right.
And so one of the things we hit right here, because of course I teach this material a lot, is this is very hard for people to understand. And so what I always do right now is I always jump forward in time, because when we start to get into phases of time that we actually remember and have a feeling of experience with, then it's easier for people to understand. So if we jump ahead to the long count or the historical cycle, the 5,125-year cycle going back to 3,116 BC, first of all, if you look at the planet 5,000 years ago, suddenly in the Middle East and in China and in Mesoamerica, suddenly civilization popped up. And you can't pick up a single history book and not notice that the historians always say, suddenly 5,000 years ago, civilization started, you know. And so where it gets easier to understand these time accelerations is each one of them is faster and there's less time involved. And so the next one in the historical cycle, that's in the middle of it, is 1755 A.D. And in that's a 256-year-long cycle, 1755 to 2011 A.D. So if you divide 256 into 5,125, you're going to get 1/20th. So in 1750, time accelerated again, and Kalaman calls that the planetary underworld, and I kind of like to call it the industrial underworld, because suddenly in 1755, industry sprung up all over the planet, and we went through a major time acceleration, which if listeners tune into it, you can feel in your consciousness that 5,000-year cycle of history and civilization, and we're all familiar with it because we read a lot about it. And then if we go up to the next underworld, the planetary underworld, you can actually feel in your cellular matrix and in your consciousness, you can actually feel a major time acceleration in 1755. And if you go back all over the planet, huge changes take place, including especially the foundation of the United States, for example, basically in 1755. Even though the Constitution is the real formation is 1776. The first formation of the United States, the Articles of Confederation is exactly 1755. Then the next division by 20 is 1999. And if listeners tune into it, which is the galactic underworld, it's the underworld that is causing us to become galactic citizens by 2011 AD, which of course is very relevant to exopolitics. But if you go back to 1999, there isn't a single person who won't remember that there was a radical time acceleration at that point. Like, you remember Y2K and all that crazy stuff?
Right.
Everything just sped up exponentially in 1999, and I know until I discovered Kalaman's material, I couldn't figure out what was going on.
Right. And so we are now in the galactic underworld period. Just a point, because people may ask, why the terminology underworld?
Yeah, that's an interesting question. And this is one of the reasons that I admire Kalaman so much, because, of course, before I discovered Kalaman, which was only about 3 years ago now, I was a Mayan elder and a Mayan researcher for many, many years. And that means that we not only study the calendar, but we also study Mayan sacred scripture and ritual and all that, obviously. And so what Kalaman has done, which is really great, is for terminology for the different cycles in the calendar, he uses Mayan terminology. So the nine underworlds is a Mayan term for these worlds of consciousness that are affecting the actual evolution of us and life itself. And then, for example, speaking of Mayan terminology, each one of the nine underworlds is then divided into the 13 heavens. And then the 13 heavens are 7 days and 6 nights of evolution. So all of that is Mayan terminology. It's not a threatening thing to say underworld, if you know what I mean. It's just simply a Mayan term.
Right. And so just staying kind of with the overall, what is the next stage after the galactic?
Well, I have to ask you, are you ready? I know you know the answer, but I bet you haven't thought about the implications of it. Because according to Kalaman, the ninth underworld, which is the last time acceleration, occurs in 2011 AD. It's from February through October. And what Kalaman is saying is that we are going to be going 20 times faster in 2011 than we have been since 1999. Now, to try to comprehend that is just almost impossible, but you don't want to know what, Alfred? I think you're one of the few people on the planet right now who could imagine that, because Kalaman calls it the universal underworld. And what you're working with in exopolitics is the issue of universe society. And so surely Kalaman's terminology for that ninth underworld must be suggesting, and this is all coming together for me recently, it must be suggesting that the time acceleration in 2011 is going to be the experience of being part of universe society again, which certainly would feel like it was going 20 times faster.
Right.
Isn't that amazing?
Yes.
I mean, how Kalaman saw this, it still boggles my mind that he saw what he saw.
Yes. Now, let me follow up with some questions that one hears and that I've heard over the years. And one question is, what comes after the Mayan calendar ends?
Well, again, you're probably one of the few people who can imagine it, because the calendar just seems to be an exposition of the evolution of life itself, which has then come to this pinnacle point, which is us as humans, because we, of course, are at the top of the ladder of the evolution of this planet. And so once we have achieved that level of evolution on this planet, then we are part of universe society. And I don't really think that the time cycles and the way evolution functions are probably the same. In other words, my sense of what's going on on Earth is that we've been in the middle of a process of evolutionary development. And then when we step over that threshold and complete that level of experience, the Mayan calendar ends. but then we are existing in, as part of the universe society. And in that sense, I'm very optimistic, and I don't see in any way the end of the world as being part of the question of the Mayan calendar. And as you probably realize, quite a few of the writers in the Mayan calendar field are definitely doom and gloom doomsayers. And I'm just not part of that camp at all.
Right, because the process that the Mayan calendar describes seems to be a process, and maybe this is oversimplifying it, but a process that maps what occurs with the emanations from the galactic center, which has an effect on time, and we know that black holes affect time as a dimension, and on consciousness. And so the Mayan calendar appears to be a map of these emanations as they are refracted through the crystalline core of our Earth and into creating a consciousness field, which then we all modulate through our individual transmitters, our brains and our auras and our kind of individual equipment.
Yeah. And as Kalman calls that structure within the planet itself the world tree.
Right.
Which, of course, is another not only Mayan concept, but a universal concept. There isn't a single esoteric culture on the planet that hasn't had the concept of the world tree. And so Kalman is saying that the world tree is the structure that works with the crystalline core and with the galactic center itself. That's driving these evolutionary factors. And then one of the more fascinating ideas that Kalman has is that this world tree actually has a geographical location, which is approximately in Gabon in Central Africa.
Mm-hmm. Right. You, in your other writings, have indicated, just to refer to the doom and gloom, people who are promoting the catastrophic meme along with 2012, that in fact there was a cataclysm in about 11,500 years ago, and that we have a cellular memory of it. Perhaps you could share some of that with us.
Yeah, I'm glad you brought that up because, of course, the book that you're referring to is Catastrophobia, which came out in 2001. And in Catastrophobia, I explored the cataclysm itself, which I believe, as do a number of other scientists, that the sort of end of the cataclysm, the sort of final point of the cataclysm, is 11,500 years ago. But it actually seems to kind of stretch over 11,500 years ago to like maybe 14,000 years ago. Because what seems to have caused the disturbance, this was not just the Earth, it's the whole solar system. And what seems to have caused the disturbance was fragments coming from the Vela supernova, which came into the solar system between about 14,000 and 11,500 years ago. And Catastrophobia is an exploration of the cataclysm itself. And then I think most importantly, it's an exploration of the effect of this cataclysm. Let's call it a cataclysmic period, because it really is a couple of thousand years with the Younger Dryas and a lot of the climate changes. And so Catastrophobia explores how this cataclysmic period affected human consciousness. And this is where you and I come together in our thought, because I had come up with the feeling that the cataclysm itself made humankind into a multi-traumatized species. And not just the cataclysms, but also the survival period was after the cataclysms. Must have been absolutely awful back in 7,000-8,000 BC. And because we became a multi-traumatized species, then by around 2000 BC, we became extremely warlike. And we have been exhibiting extremely negative, violent behavior. And I also, outside of exopolitics, years ago, came to the conclusion that our violence then caused us to be quarantined from the universe itself.
Right. And so this brings us up to the sort of the end of this phase of the Mayan calendar, or what we can call the underworld matrix, through the galactic and universal age, that perhaps the galactic emanations to our planetary core will be such that the effects of those engrams of the of that trauma will be such that we'll transform away from that kind of violent, prone, and traumatized species. Is that?
Yeah, and the way Coloman, look, he, of course, he and I would agree with everything you said.
Yeah.
But his particular genius is in showing us that each one of the nine underworlds ends in 2011, so that if we go back 16.4 billion years ago, or if we go back 820 million years ago, each one of those underworlds, the cellular, mammalian, familial, tribal, regional, those are all progressing forward, and they're still developing, and they're still in process. Like, we're still going through a cellular level of development. We're still going through a mammalian level of development and the various stages of hominid evolution. And this, of course, is a fascinating idea. But where it becomes even more fascinating to me is that if you can master the Coloman-Clough matrix regarding these underworlds, then, and many, many people have, it's amazing how many people understand this, because it seems to be such a resonant idea that once people get into it, they kind of really raises people's intelligence. Because what you can do with this system, once you understand it, is you can take any moment in time, and you can use it as a method for going back into the past. So, for example, right now, well, that is as of November 13th, 2008, just a couple of months ago, we are now in day six of the galactic underworld. Now, as I said a minute ago, the galactic underworld is 1999 through 2011. But it has 13 heavens in it, and it has 7 days and six nights. And so by knowing that you are in day six of the galactic underworld, you can go back to dates of the cellular, mammalian, familial, tribal, regional, or national, or planetary, and you can look and see what was going on during day six in order to understand what might be happening this year. And would you like me to cover a little bit of that?
Sure. Yeah, we have only a couple of minutes left in this segment, but let's do it briefly because we'll be,
quickly because I've been doing it for so many people.
Oh, good.
And when I went back, when we entered day six, I went back through all the underworlds to see what was going on, and I was astonished at what I found. So first of all, if we go back into the cellular underworld, which is 16.4 billion years ago through 2011, day six is 2.5 to 3.8 billion years ago. And if you think about it, that's the first place in the cellular underworld that we have any data, because our solar system and our planet formulated about 4.5 billion years ago. So I was really excited to see, well, okay, what was going on during day six of the cellular? And the amazing thing about it is that during day six, we had the development of unicellular life forms called prokaryotes. So during the cellular, we have the first development of life forms. Then, if we go back to the mammalian underworld, the mammalian underworld is 820 million years through 2011. And if we go back to day six, we go back to 126 to 189 million years ago. And during that period on our planet, Pangaea broke up. In other words, the continents separated. And as far as life forms are concerned, in mammals, we have brain lateralization, which means during day six, we develop the left and right. Humans is very developed at this time. Then if we go back to the familial underworld, which is 41 million years ago through 2011, if we go back to day six, we go back to 6.3 to 9.5 million years ago. And what happened on our planet during that period was that human lineages that later on became hominids and humans, they split from apes and chimpanzees. And also during that period, we stood up. In other words, apes and chimpanzees in the early lineages started standing up, which is called bipedalism, And that's when we started to be able to actually use our upper limbs for making tools eventually. Then if we go back to the tribal underworld and notice that each one of these is 1/20th of the previous one, the tribal underworld is 2 million years ago through 2011 AD, and we go back to 216 to 474,000 years ago. And at that point, we have Neanderthal and the development of a very, very advanced being who is getting very, very close to Cro-Magnon man. Then the next underworld is called the regional, and it is 100,000 years long, basically 102,000 years ago to through 2011. And in my own research, this is the only thing in this whole list here that is my own research and not something that's just utterly factual. I believe that during the regional underworld, which is about 15 to 22,000 years ago, I believe that that's when the global maritime civilization existed on our planet. In other words, I see that as a period of fairly advanced development on our planet culturally, which was then knocked back by the cataclysm later.
Right.
Then if we go back to the national underworld, which is 3,116 BC through 2011, we go back to AD 829 to 1223 AD, and this was when the Islamic medieval awakening helped bring Europe out of the Dark Ages. And this is somewhat of a Eurocentric point of view, but at this point there are reasons for concentrating on Europe. I won't get into it now. Then the next underworld is the planetary underworld, which is 1755 through 2011. And that corresponds, day six of the planetary is 1952 through 1972 AD. And this is when America became the global empire, the consumerist global empire during the Cold War. And so the reason that I think this is so fascinating is that if you think about it, during each one of these day sixes, we made a radical step forward in the evolution of that particular underworld. And also another thing that we can see is that these kinds of radical steps are so intense that while you're in the middle of it, you can't see what's going on. And so looking at day six during the galactic underworld, which is where we are right now, of course, I propose that the radical step forward for us, which is basically this year, would be that the human race would wake up to exopolitics and would begin to prepare itself to enter universe society.
Right. Well, that's a very good point, because we've run out of time on this week's program, but we can take it up on our very next week's program. And so we've been with our very special guest, Barbara Han Clow, author of The Mayan Code, Time Acceleration and Awakening the World Mind. This is Exopolitics Radio. I'm your host, Alfred Weber. Please stay tuned. Thank you.
back. This is Exopolitics Radio. I'm your host, Alfred Weber. Well, we've had a very interesting program here, bringing together two major blocks, building blocks, we call them, as we transit through the sixth day of the galactic underground of the hand Clow Kalaman time acceleration matrix, the end of the planetary quarantine. And we here at Exopolitics Radio intend to bring it to you in its, shall we say, unexpurgated version. You should know that the discovery of life on Mars is facing fierce resistance and is bringing up a tremendous amount of fear among gatekeepers in the exopolitical community, gatekeepers in the UFO community, in the public at large. This is a primal reality that is being brought up, and that is going back. This is the first formal kind of pictures and communication, as it were, openly through NASA photographs of the Martian civilization and of the Earth civilization, which were last separated in a very large trauma in 2500 BC, it's estimated, when a portion of the Vela supernova came into the solar system and destroyed the atmosphere and civilization of Mars and destroyed a good deal of our great maritime civilization here on Earth. It's a very traumatic time. So bringing up this material re-traumatizes human beings as to the existence of life on a neighboring planet. And not only that, life which may be very, very close to ours. Let's call it genetic cousins. We have met the most amazing reactions amongst certain exopolitical gatekeepers, and very, very reactive element. At the same time, we're meeting a lot of support. And we know that after a period of initial resistance, the Mars findings at www.exopolitics.com will be found to be true, and there will be formal public disclosure of this fact. So stay with it and stay with us. This is Exopolitics Radio. I'm your host, Alfred Weber, wishing you a wonderful, miracle-filled, and discernment-driven day, week, and life. Thank you.